Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And oddly enough, Jim, we have a Clinton in the good martini, and not because something bad is happening to a Clinton, although Hillary's classic struggle with the subway turnstile yesterday probably could qualify as a good martini if we really wanted it to. But no, it's actually a Bill Clinton. He was at a rally for Hillary yesterday in Philadelphia, and some of the protesters from the Black Lives Matter crowd showed up. And while Hillary Clinton has been absolutely decimating Bernie Sanders in the black vote, Black Lives Matter has a problem with Hillary and Bill because of the crime bill back in the 90s, which conservatives are certainly no fan of. But the Black Lives Matter crew believes that it unfairly targeted blacks, and too many black people went to prison as a result of that. And so they showed up with shouting and signs at this rally. And Bill Clinton, who has been fairly lethargic on the campaign trail so far, was having none of it ultimately.
I don't know how you would characterize the gang leaders who got 13-year-old kids hopped up on crack and sent them out onto the street to murder other African-American children. Maybe you thought they were good citizens. She didn't. She didn't. You are defending the people who kill the lives you say matter. Tell the truth.
We should put out a disclaimer here since we're so hard on Donald Trump a lot of the time, Jim. We are definitely hashtag capital letters never Hillary and never Bill. But given how much Hillary herself has pandered to Black Lives Matter, Bernie Sanders, of course, seeded the whole rally out in Seattle months ago to Black Lives Matter. This is the first time a prominent Democrat has actually bothered to throw out some facts in their face. And I don't know if this is another sister soldier moment, but at least for a moment, Bill Clinton seemed to have the fire back.
Having spent a good portion of the 90s strongly disagreeing with Bill Clinton and not thinking that he was moving the country in the right direction, I think most Clinton foes ultimately respected him for no other reason than for his ability to figure out where the pulse of the country was. And it's, you know, we use this phrase now, sister soldier moment, because back then, Bill Clinton realized the Democratic Party had been perceived as way too far to the left and kind of pandering and unwilling to confront these issues head on. And Sista Soulja was a rapper, a hip hop artist, and who basically said, maybe we should have some day where instead of black people killing black people should only kill white people. And Bill Clinton did the daring move of saying, hey, that's wrong. And what's interesting is that this was considered controversial. This was considered a daring move on, which is to a lot of us that, no, actually, it'd be really a bad idea for any group of people based on any skin color to run around deciding, hey, we're going to have a special day for killing this other group of people. Most of the world's terrible genocides and hatred and mob attacks have all been based on this. This is not what America is supposed to be about. But Clinton did it because it ruffled feathers. I remember, Jesse Jackson really fuming about that. This was seen as an important signal to everybody who looks at the most radical activists in the African American community and said, this is not us. This is not what we want this country to stand for. That is a crazy extreme position to take. Now, we've seen Bill Clinton pop up every now and then during this campaign season. People are saying how much older he looks. It looks like you can tell his voice is really hoarse in that comment there. But, there's actually a little bit of a pattern developing here, Greg. It was not that long ago that Bill Clinton was at some rally for Hillary in North Carolina. He said, millions and millions and millions of people look at that pretty picture of America that Obama painted, and they cannot find themselves in it to save their lives. And, he says, next one is Hillary is running for president to put every single American in the picture President Obama painted. Kind of veiled, but kind of out there criticism that Obama has this portrait of the economy doing well, and lots of people don't feel it. And then on March 21st, he does this other comment, and he talks about this awful legacy of the past 8 years behind us. wait a second. I think Bill Clinton is, I don't think the STDs have caught up with him. I don't think he's going senile. I don't think he's losing his mind. I think he actually knows exactly what he's doing. And he knows that where the Democratic Party is right now, Black Lives Matter crowd, the Occupy Wall Street, the campus protesters, the social justice warriors, they are all much further to the left than where the average American is. They have actually, people see them as more of the same problems, not as the solution. And Bill Clinton, I think, actually wants to steer Hillary Clinton back towards a Clintonian third-way centrism. And people argue, oh, it's not going to work because the Democratic Party has changed a lot in the past 16 years. You know, Greg, if Bill Clinton is crazy, I think he's crazy like a fox. I actually think he's exactly what he's doing. He's trying to create up a little bit of daylight between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and the left so that she could run more towards the center. And we'll see if it works out for him. But look, you know, anytime somebody stands up and says, hey, you know, Black Lives Matter is spewing a lot of nonsense, and it's a Democrat, that's worth noticing. And I think it's kind of a canary in the coal mine for this movement that you have now gone too far where mainstream Democratic politicians think you've gone cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
The question, of course, with Bill Clinton always is he doing this because he understands where the pulse of the country is or because he actually disagrees with these people? I mean, when it comes to his policies, I'm sure he disagrees. And the bad news is he's so Machiavellian that this is all ultimately only designed to position Hillary better for the fall campaign. But like you said, ultimately, if you do have a prominent Democrat finally willing to stand up to these people, at least there's a nugget of good news, even though it's probably worse for the Republican nominee.
These are the, you know, if you look at Black Lives Matter as being this radical, extreme, anti-police, anti-law and order, making excuses for unacceptable criminal behavior, if you look at them as that, then Bill Clinton it represents a white blood cell within the body politic of the Democratic Party saying, no, this is not what we're supposed to be. Now, we'll see if it works out. But it's nice to see that, you know, for the Democratic Party that by and large was completely terrified of confronting Black Lives Matter and willing to march in lockstep. This is the first sign that somebody is saying, hey, wait a minute, this is not going to help us win elections. And in fact, this is actually wrong on the policy and on the merits.
And if you think the crime bill was too tough, I'm sure there's some midnight basketball graduates that might disagree with you on that. So, all right, on to the bad martini now. And of course, as we mentioned, we're hashtag never Hillary and hashtag never Bernie at the same time. And Ted Cruz had a good night against Donald Trump in Wisconsin on Tuesday. But there's bad news for both of them when it comes to what the people who didn't vote for them are planning to do if they're the nominee come November. This is courtesy of Ala Pundit over at Hot Air. A leftover from Tuesday night, in case you thought there's even a whisper of a chance that the GOP will win this November, disabuse yourself of that now. It's not just never Trump that threatens to sink the party, it's never Cruz, too. When asked what they would do if Cruz were the GOP nominee in November, only 65% of Wisconsin Republicans said they'd vote for him. The remainder instead would vote for a third-party candidate, 18%, vote for Hillary Clinton, 7%, or not vote at all, 6%. The numbers got slightly worse for the GOP when voters were asked to consider Trump as the nominee. Only 61% said they'd vote for the businessman, with the rest defecting to a third party, 16%, or to Clinton, 10%, or simply staying home, 9%. So, Jim, both of these guys hovering below two-thirds of Republican primary voters willing to go to the mat for them in November. Obviously, minds can change when they see how horrific the Democratic nominee, and those numbers could tick up a little bit, but that's a lot of work to do compared to where Hillary is among Democrats, even among some Bernie supporters.
It was not long ago that I said, look, things are actually starting to look a little bit better for Republicans. We talked about the good news in the Senate poll in Pennsylvania. Hillary continues to look really weak overall as a general election candidate when she's not up against Donald Trump. So I said, look, the Republicans could salvage this year with two simple steps. The first one, don't nominate the least popular potential nominee in 30, 40 years, which is Donald Trump. But step two was unite after Cleveland, which I admit sounds simple, probably a little bit harder to do. I am struck by the number of people who find Cruz unacceptable, particularly if it's Trump supporters. Look, on the one hand, I realize it's down to two guys and the other guy's the rival. But on the other hand, policy-wise, Cruz spent a lot of time, you know, playing footsie and being nice to Donald Trump back in 2015. And policy-wise, particularly on the border, I don't think he'd be that different, making me suspect that for a lot of Trump supporters, the real appeal is stylistically. It's the attitude of Trump. It's the way he talks, his dismissiveness, what I consider to be his obnoxiousness, and they consider his authenticity is really the appeal. And that ultimately, the positions don't matter nearly as much. Maybe border wall, maybe deport the illegal immigrants. But ultimately, that's what they like, not, you know, Cruz stuff. Maybe things will look different in the heat of the summer when we are in Cleveland and people begin to say, okay, whoever the nominee is gives the acceptance speech and makes their pitch to the party. But it is a steep road ahead for the Republican nominee. And was it Good Housekeeping or some magazine used to have the, you know, can this marriage be saved? Can this party be saved, Greg? It really is a deep divide in which nobody feels an interest to give much of an inch.
It's amazing. I mean, Cruz gets 48% in Wisconsin, 65% overall say they'd vote for him. So out of the remaining 52%, only 17, one-third of those who didn't vote for him in the primary say they'd do so in November. That's a big hill to climb, especially in a state that needs to be competitive for Republicans. So on to the crazy martini now. And, Jim, we thought Chris Christie was an ineffective endorser for Donald Trump. Ben Carson, you have the top spot on the podium. There's been a number of positions along the way here. He, first of all, said there were two Donald Trumps, and there's a really, really sober and good judge of
the good Trump is hiding.
Yes, the good Trump is hiding.
Good Trump for private moments. He doesn't put it out on the trail.
Yes,
why would he need to do that?
There's two Trumps, and for some reason we never see the good one. Yeah. And then there was the fact that he thinks there are probably other people who are better for the job. There was the implication that he made that he might have agreed to take a job in exchange for the endorsement. Now there's this. He was on CNN with John Berman and Kate Baldwin. They were asking him about whether Corey Lewandowski is really still the guy who's running this campaign. And Carson led into this exchange.
He's a very intelligent and efficient individual. And I don't see any reason, quite frankly, that we should demonize him. If you can come up with a good reason, I'll listen to it.
Well, look, I mean, he's been charged with misdemeanor assault in Florida. I mean, a lot of people think that is a reason.
Well, I mean, a lot of people have been charged with various things. That doesn't necessarily mean that we need to demonize them. You've probably been charged with something, too. You maybe with a misdemeanor or something. Doesn't mean that you're an evil, horrible person. And,
this is part of the problem we have
in America today. Everybody wants to demonize everybody rather than sitting down and having an intelligent discussion.
Oh, Jim, it's certainly true that some people get charged for things they didn't do, or it's just a bad charge overall. But to assume that a bunch of people get charged for a lot of different stuff, hey, I'm sure you've been charged, too. It's
Greg,
not the best defense.
Greg, you must have been accused of assault once or twice, right? You know, we all get battery charges against us every now and then. It happens, you know. Sometimes you forget to update your car registration or let the meter expire, or you grab somebody, get charged with assault. It happens. Yeah. Well done, Dr. Carson. Well done. The other thing is this great pitch for Corey Lewandowski. And actually, you know, as the frothing of the mouth Trump critic here, I think the decision to give Lewandowski is keeping the same title and he's staying in place and it's not actually changing. But Paul Lexall, I believe is the pronunciation of his name, the former gentleman who's worked on basically every Republican campaign from Gerald Ford to John McCain, like, you know, in one role or another, is in charge of the delegate wrangling for Trump and apparently taking a larger role, as he put it in television this morning. I answer to one man, Donald Trump, meaning he is not under Corey Lewandowski. So this is probably a good move for him, and it'd be kind of nice for, you know, Carson. Like an ordinary talking head surrogate, Greg, would say something like, well, we're at a different stage of the campaign. Lewandowski's leadership got us to where we are, but now it's time to broaden our appeal and focus on winning delegates and start turning towards what will be needed to win the general election against Hillary Clinton, blah, blah, blah. But instead he says, look, you know, we all get charged with crimes. Yeah, not all of us, Dr. Carson. So. The idea, here's the thing, for as much as we pick on Ben Carson, Greg, we should acknowledge, if he secretly can't stand Donald Trump and still is angry about the comparison to a child molester,
Yes. And
he's running this like extraordinary deep cover operation to undermine Trump from the inside, then he really is as brilliant as everybody says he is. And in fact, my hat would be off to him if that's the case. And day by day, the evidence stacks up.
The last one you'd expect for such a devious tactic. Jim, another amazing day. Talk to you Monday. Have a good weekend.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And tune in again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch. Have a great weekend, everyone.